12, 1980, Taos, New Mexico, and we're having a session with Bartholomew. Good morning, Bartholomew.
Good morning.
We've had several questions from people who would like to know how one might dedicate one's life to Bartholomew, or what types of things can one do for Bartholomew.
Well, I ask that this question be brought up particularly out of gratitude to those who have the type of heart that is concerned about this kind of thing, and I'm very grateful. Not on behalf of myself necessarily, but it reflects a state of heart and mind that I think is very worthwhile for the person who has it, which means that they, if we could put this into recognizable cosmic terms, what it says here is that these people who are asking this would like to serve something vaster than their own understanding, that they would like to, while going about their own business of finding their own freedom, they want at the same time to serve what they consider to be a higher source than themselves, which is of course erroneous in the sense that all the sources are one, but nevertheless it reflects a state of heart and mind that is commendable, and I am very grateful. The answer, of course, is very simple. There is no need for everyone hearing all of these tapes and all of the prattlings on all of these tapes to rush here to this mesa by this mountain and try somehow to dig more vegetable gardens or to build more houses or do anything else. To think of Bartholomew, whoever that might be, as a person is a mistake. The fact is that whatever is going on here is simply reflective of the coming into, in this case, physical and verbal form, a vaster source of wisdom that is available to anyone at any time, in any place. It is not my desire to have clustered around on this empty mesa hundreds of people wandering around chanting my name and giving omniscient thoughts to me about my vast understanding. That is not, I repeat, that is not my view of the thing. My view of the thing, to the contrary, is that if I am here to say anything, it is to say again and yet again, the job is singular. You all have the same job wherever your physical bodies may be located, and that is you must be free. And to whatever extent that you can free yourself from the illusion, to that extent you can be said to be helping me. But I would like to put in something else that is perhaps harder, but nevertheless is so immediate that everyone can do it. It is true that for some of you, you have projected freedom out into the future. Fine, so be it. We will move until the future is upon us. But at the same time that you are making that movement, there is something that you can do that is representative of the divine wisdom, and that is this: to always, in all times and in all places, have an extended hand and an extended heart to whoever is before you. If God can be said to personify anything, it is the openness of compassion and understanding and readiness to serve. Now you say to me, what is the difference between this and the do-gooder who goes about making a business of doing good? Well, the characteristic of a do-gooder is that they somehow see themselves as superior, helping a needy, inferior type of a person. And that is not really very helpful, although it certainly is more helpful than one who goes around trying to destroy others. We will agree at least to that. But there is another state of a seeker who, because they are so aware of their own dark side, if you will, their own unfinished business, if you will, their own illusory perception, becomes intimately compassionate with the same difficulties, however they manifest in other people, and yearns to do whatever they can to help the other person simplify their life, clarify their life, in order that that person might be free of that encumbrance and move on to illusion, to the freedom of understanding. Now, what does this mean? It simply means that don't go through life thinking that your job is to make life difficult for others so that they will see through their illusions. Don't worry. Life takes care of that without any assistance from any of you. But what can you do What you can do is be ever aware that all of you share a common difficulty. You share the pain of a separated existence, however that is manifesting. And as you go through sharing this common denominator of pain and suffering and feelings of unfulfillment, to whatever extent you can put your hand out in true understanding of equality and not superiority, to help when help is asked, to fill in when a need is there, to be available for mankind in whatever way is meaningful for you, is a tremendous help. Because you see, the more people are confused by illusory comings and goings of their feelings, the more difficult it is for them to stand firm and to move toward freedom. So, to me, service to higher understanding, which is all we're talking about, comes in twofold perception. One, a constant or as much of a constant movement towards your own freedom as possible, which means awareness in however you choose to do it, practicing awareness constantly as is possible. And second, your heart attuned to the needs, the legitimate needs of those that are in your environment. And that changes instantly. One day, it's one person, you're walking down the street, now it's another. You're before the sales clerk in a store, there is another. Whatever. Always be aware that in everything you do and in every movement you make and every look of your eye, you're either easing someone's burden or adding to it. You see, you have a choice. And I don't mean going through life as some kind of wonderful messiah, and I'm going to walk into town and I'm going to bestow my goodies on others. No, but just understanding the common bond that you share. Because however someone is manifesting it, they are hurting. If they are not free, they are hurting. On some level of their being, they are aching. And if you can understand that, even those that say, well, there's nothing wrong, I wake up in the morning and, oh, my life, and so on, so on. All right, fine. If they're free, then I accept that. If they are not free, then somewhere within them, whether they have seen it or not, there is an ache. Because to have no aches at all on the earth plane means to see that you are not separate, that you can never be separate, that nothing can touch you, you are totally invulnerable. And if that is the state of consciousness that person emanates, then that is a statement they can make. Their life is free and happy and positive. So, in answer to these very kind questions, in every movement of your life, if you can be aware of the common bond that you share of ache, and just see how you can make the way clear. How you can just buy small things. You know, it isn't the large things that end up mattering, it's the small things. It's the good morning. It's the, can I help you? It's the, well, I see it needs to be done and you go and do it. It's the doing without the talking. It's the observing and filling. It's the constant putting, if you want to see what it's saying, you're saying, I'm putting others' concerns before my own. Because my awareness is totally into how I can make the way clear for others while I myself am sturdily moving on toward my own understanding. And this, of course, is why I, if I might be frank, am not terribly fond of isolation, of the so-called old-time yogi who was able to sit in the mountains and chant and do so forth. I mean, everything was fine until somebody walked up to the cave and blocked the light, and then out comes the anger and so forth. This is why I think freedom is easier, that's the wrong word, freedom is faster to completion to the really dedicated soul if they can do part of their time in the marketplace and part of their day in solitude and make this commitment to both ends of the scale, into the silence and then out into action. And if you can keep this flow going on a balanced basis, then you're all right. But if you find that your life is mostly outward, then you are avoiding the inward. But on the other hand, if your life is very inward, then you are avoiding the outward. And it is this common feeling, and again I must say, if you set yourselves up as some people who are better than others, and your job is to help, a terrifying word is help, then you are going to reflect that. But when you go out with an open heart that just says, use me, use me, use me, realizing that whatever is being done is from a vaster understanding, and you either choose to let it come through or you don't, things will begin to change for you. Now, what about the statement that I made, that if anyone would totally give me their life for 1 year, I could promise a certain amount of realization, and I still stand on that. Now, what does that mean? That again does not mean rushing here and trying to make sure that you take care of, did you need this? Trying to take care of all of your life's problems so that you can be here and so on in this location. I simply mean this, that if 1 year, 12 months of 1 year, one was to be totally aware within themselves during their conscious moments, it would begin slipping into the night and into the dream state and the sleep state. And at the end of a year, that person would be utterly transformed. Whether to say that they would be totally free, we'll see. That depends on many things. But to say that they would be totally transformed and in a completely different state of awareness is a true statement, and I will stand on that. So, when I say give me a year of your life, that's simply what I mean. Some of you are here. But some people who are doing the best work are not here at all. They're someplace else. It has nothing to do with where your physical body is. It has everything to do with where your awareness is. And that is simply how I stand on it. And when I say give me a year of your life, I mean simply that. Can you give me, meaning the divine wisdom, not only I personify, everyone personifies this divine wisdom. I have absolutely very clear statements about that. If you can give 1 year, every moment, of every hour, of every day, for 1 year, you will see that things are not as they were. That freedom is a real, tangible, tasteable quality. And you will understand. That is simply what is meant by that.
Next, we have a question about angels. What are they?
Oh, this is a difficult question. And the reason that it is difficult is that there are so many things I could say, none of which will make any sense to you until you have allowed yourself to tap that area of awareness that is called higher consciousness. But let me just briefly say a few things. I think it is a great mistake to think that you live your lives isolated in little capsules that are called bodies, walking through something you call empty space, banging into tables and chairs, and that is it. The fact is that when your spiritual awareness begins to open, one of the reasons people leave the spiritual path is they begin to sense very clearly that this thing called space is inhabited. And because they have been conditioned by lifetimes that anything that is not seeable is therefore threatening, they leave the path and choose to do something quite different. Because when you are beginning to really do your homework, you will know that space is not empty. Now, one of the qualities that you will find in space, of course, is a lot of what we call the astral, and all of that is there. And I say, so what? Just keep going and you'll get through it. Just as I say, so what? When you find you have difficulties within your being, go through it. There are other things there as well. But as out, so within. I have told you before, when you practice space meditation, which I rarely talk about anymore because I find that humans seem to not really be interested in it. Therefore, I have really ceased talking about it. Very few people have really given it their all. So obviously, we have to try something that will work. But when I began, as I did my prattlings many, many, many months ago, I began with space. And I said, if you could understand that and keep your awareness on the space without and the space within, during your waking hours on the space without and during your sleeping, your meditative hours on the space within, you would begin to know that space is tangible. And one of the qualities awash in the space is that realm of understanding that you would call the angelic kingdom, or if you happen to be a Hindu, the Deva kingdom. All right, this is a reality. The fact that they are there, what meaning does it have to you? Well, that depends entirely on you. By that I mean this. There are some people who are absolutely repulsed by the idea of having any kind of interrelationship with any of that kind of level of awareness. It comes not through arrogance, as one would think, but because many of you have been trapped on that level for lifetimes. You have run into these wondrous beings which exist and whose beauty radiates a peace and a quality of upliftment that is absolutely beautiful. and you have been trapped for lifetimes on that level. So some of you have come in that and have said, this lifetime I will not dwell there. I will not. And therefore you have moved on to something else, or are trying to. All right. And that is totally understandable. What you must never do, however, is to place that kingdom, if you wish to call it that, as some kind of bother. If it's a bother, it's only because it's your bother. It is not that the kingdom itself is in any way bothersome, because it is very quiet. It does not infringe on your life. It does not come in and rumble around and try and make trouble for you. Now, what about those people who would like to participate in that kingdom? All right. Understand this. As you move through the next eons of what you call time, you are going to, as you expand, participate in vaster and vaster and vaster levels of understanding and awareness. And it will change, obviously. The divine is change. The divine is extension. The divine is movement. And therefore you, or whatever part of you you choose to call, your awareness will continue to move into other areas and join with and commingle with various areas of understanding. One of those areas could easily be, for some of you, what is called the Deva or the angelic kingdom. Now, it is much more likely for you to move through that area sooner than it is to move to the pure white light of the void, because it is, shall we say, more stripped down. It is an area of awareness that carries a lesser movement of velocity. Therefore, you can move into it sooner than you can move into the clear light. All right. But if you wish to use it, I would suggest something very simple, open, and free-flowing, and nothing that is going to so attach you that you get stuck there. By that I mean, if you can look on this kingdom as representative of forces of understanding and dynamic awareness that you are capable of taking in and working with, then you will begin to get a feeling for what it is. For example, it is very fair to say, you have put names on all of these. Understand, those names are your own. Do not think that there is an entity called an Archangel Michael, and that if you call out for Archangel Michael, that he then somehow has to rush to you and help you. You may not be ready for Archangel Michael. You may just not be ready at all for that velocity. But what you are saying is that you have heard a mental impression of what he is and what he represents, and you want to call out to that source, seeing it as the highest for you, and that's fair. I have absolutely no problem with that. But what you have to understand is you make the call, and then whatever comes, comes, to whatever level you are able to understand it. All of these names, all of these personifications are man's personifications. You have, because you can only see in terms of man and his physical body, you have thrown out ideas of vast people out there doing things that people would do. That is not how I perceive it. However, there's no danger in that, as long as you understand that it is a perception of your own and you can leave it at that. What you are really talking about is vast movements of power that are available to you to the extent that you wish to be available to it. And each one in your mind personifies a different area of need. For example, some of them personify love, and that is, if that is what you need, you put out the call and that kind of energy comes. Let us say that what you're interested in is strength, because you feel yourself to be weak, and certain of those areas pull in that. Do you see? You have them all categorized. All right. If you know precisely what you need, and if you are very sure that the name that you're calling will represent that, then go on and call for it, and there's no problem with that at all. My greatest suggestion to you is to transcend that and simply say, I know that all of those areas of dynamic wisdom and love and compassion exist. You know better than I, because some people fool themselves. They say they want courage, whereas they are already overwhelmed with will and do not really need it. But the last thing they're going to call for is that which they really need, which might in this case be compassion and humility. So once again, unless you are very sure of what you need and can speak without reservation of what you need, I would suggest to you that you simply leave it open and say to the vast ones, fill me where I am empty. Remove that which is an obstacle. Use me as your vessel and leave it at that. But if some of you feel very drawn, fine. Proceed. But be very clear that you are not trying to build in you a force that is already overdeveloped. Because some of you will call for the wrong source. Some of you who really need humility and love and compassion and understanding are going to be calling for other powers. So be careful. Be aware. What you're looking for is a balance of all of these qualities. So, use them as you wish. That they are there is absolutely a fact. That you call them angels, fine, go right ahead. The fact simply remains that they are vortexes of energy that have, through their compassion, and you understand this is the motivating force, is their compassion, have chosen to, if you will, dedicate that energy toward movement on the earth plane, not that they are exclusively here. This is another great mistake earthlings make. Those vast forces are available to vast areas of consciousness that transcend far beyond the physical globe. We're talking about power sweeping that you have no conception of. And to think that some little god is perched on some little mountain waiting for you to call out to it so it can begin to ablaze within you is a mistake. These are vast, sweeping eddies of unending compassion and understanding. And you simply ask, and they rush to fill you. So please, the more you can unpersonify all of these things, I think the less likely it is that you're going to become attached. So I hope I've cleared that up.
What's the difference between you and an angel?
I understand the question. The difference is simply that I think we could put it into these terms. Different vortexes of energy have different jobs. Just as on the earth plane, some of you have one job, one of you have another. My job is different. The ideas that the human has come up with as far as the angelic kingdom is concerned is to me very strange. I have heard all sorts of strange things, such as the angelic kingdom is one kingdom, but man can rise above that kingdom to a higher state and so forth, and somehow angels are less in some way than man because man has other qualities that the angelic kingdom doesn't possess and so forth. It is extremely confusing to me as I perceive all of the paraphernalia that the mind has created. The fact is this. You move in the same patterns of expansion that all energy moves, which is ever increasing. If you do not want to forever be tied to the human condition, then please don't tie the angelic kingdom to their kingdom. You understand? It's an ever-increasing, ever-expanding vortex of understanding. And to say that you, the wondrous human being, are going to move through your humanness, and then, if you're lucky, you'll slip through the angelic kingdom and onward to the gods, or however you have it, is absolute balderdash. It has no meaning. All of createdness is ever-extending, moving into vaster areas of understanding, and who are you to decide? Don't worry about the angelic kingdom, worry about your own, which is get out of the human kingdom, move into the angelic kingdom and find out. That's all I can tell you. The difference is simply this. The angelic kingdom, as you have quoted it in your mind, has a certain function. A part of my understanding is totally and utterly merged with part of that awareness. To say that I, whoever this is that you're talking about, the I that you think I am, is totally removed from who you would call the Archangel Michael is wrong. Of course, a part of my awareness is conjoined with the Archangel Michael. Absolutely. So why not? So is yours. The difference is you don't know it, I do. That's all. But it is not only to be confined to that. And if I might be very frank with you, neither is the Archangel Michael confined to the Archangel Michael. These are just human terms to try to put into little compartments categories that are past your understanding totally. So the difference is simply that we all have different jobs. We all participate in the same source of understanding. We are all on our way toward vaster understanding, and that is really the truth of the situation. There is no place, for example, someone who is so often overlooked, which I have mentioned before, is who I would call the Divine Mother. Outside of India, the Divine Mother is not given much. And yet, in my understanding of humans, the qualities personified by Divine Mother are the ones that could be most beautifully used on the earth plane at this time. It is much more exciting to talk in terms of Archangel Michaels and so forth because of their dynamic will and they have power and so forth. And what are the others that have the power? Your names are not connected with the reality, so it's hard for me. But in any case, you know the ones I mean, the ones that personify the outgoing, the dynamic, the doing, and the one that just is the compassionate sponge that takes in, accepts, and transmutes. That one is not as acceptable. So, if you're going to categorize, let's not forget the category of Divine Mother. And understand this. If you want to talk in terms of availability, the Divine Mother is one of the most available to humankind. That is why she is called the Mother. Because it is the Mother who hears the call of the child at night. The Father, full of power and wisdom, sleeps on. The Mother, ever alert, ever ready, awakes, rises up, and moves out to help. And this is the characteristic of Divine Mother. And she exists. And those of you who are seeking love and compassion, I can think of no source, if you wish to personify, that would be more helpful than the Divine Mother. She exists, she is real, and she is willing to help. But Western man and Western woman has turned the collective back on Divine Mother, because this is a man's world, is the West. Man world dominates the images, the symbols, anyway. The power lies with the male, and I have no quarrel with that. But I simply say, those of you who are seeking to balance your being, those of you who feel the need for love and compassion, the Divine Mother is there. And that energy is available.
When one is ready to begin to look within through meditation and insight, one discovers hidden drives such as wanting to be loved, wanting more power, or wanting a variety of sexual relationships, or whatever it is. How does one work with this newly discovered data without turning one's life into chaos?
I think that's a worthwhile question. All right, that depends on you. I would like to be very clear about one thing. People use what I say to their own advantage. And if someone listening to my tapes and what I prattle has decided that what they want is a vast extracurricular sexual life, they will be able to find within what I say plenty of validation to do precisely what they want to do. If someone wants to walk out on existing situations and start new ones because they just don't want to be bothered with taking care of the existing ones, then they will find plenty of validation to move out and do new and creative things, creating probably more of the same. All right. But then there are those who do not have that, who do not wish to escape, who see clearly that dealing clearly and completely with the karma that one has created before you is going to end up being more helpful than leaving unfinished business behind and walking on and creating more unfinished business. All right, now it is to this second person that I am talking. To the first person, they will do as they please, and they will find justification somewhere, and that's really their own business. But what about the sincere and devout student who is doing whatever they can to get within their being and to deeply understand and come across these areas? Let us take a typical example of a woman who is beginning to get deeply within her own being, and she comes across this layer of her being that cries out to meet, to have a mate on the earth plane that is her real mate, in the sense of one who can be counted on to always be loving, compassionate, kind, never to turn a harsh word, always to put her and her needs first, to succor her in all times, to be what is the ideal. She looks at her existing mate and she says, oh my goodness, it's not like that. It's not like that at all. And deep within this person will rise up, one, a resentment against the mate for not meeting her qualifications, and two, a yearning to have those conditions met. What does such a person do? Now, I am supposing that this person is sufficiently advanced in the spiritual work to know that leaving this husband and walking down the road and finding another one is not the answer. And well, she might think, because it is true. All right, what does this person do? It is my firm belief, and I would ask all of you to test it out, that if you continue looking, if you do not go running out and start changing your life and creating chaos and stirring up the soup and complaining to your husband that he isn't what you want him to be, if you can only see this as a bottle filled with liquid, that you are starting at the bottom and you're trying to rise through the bottle and get through the neck of it and out into the freedom of the vastness, if you can see this as a process of yourself rising through this murk, what you are going to do, if you stay steadfast in your watching, steadfast in your observation, is that eventually you will come to that area, having recognized all of the areas as you move through, that says to you, it doesn't matter. It really doesn't matter. You will touch upon that place within yourself that looks at the other person and says, so what? They're hurting too. That is the level of the beginning of compassion. Don't ask this person to sit around serving me. Don't ask that this person meet all my needs. And there is that level within the human. And this is the thing that I keep saying. People have asked me, why do I have faith in human nature? I repeat, I have no faith in your egos. Why should I? They are gossamer. Why have faith in something that will change in an instant? No, I do not have faith in that. But there is something I do have faith in, which is that I know that one of the basic ingredients in you is the desire to be loving. Not the desire to be loved, which is one level of this murky bottle, but the desire to be loving. That is, to say in another way, that there is a level of your being that is love. And I know it is there, and it is my absolute conviction that if you will stay with it and not get out in the world and start messing around, but just stay deeply within the homework of being aware, you will get through that. Those of you who are power-driven, who finally find out that all of your life you've had all these capabilities and other people have squashed you, they haven't allowed you to be capable. Do you understand? Many people are suffering from that, especially women. They have tapped in that source of their being that is as capable as their husbands and bosses and so forth, and they say, hey, wait a minute. How about me? Why can't I go out and start being bossy and running other people's lives now that I know that I have the power? All right. You can. Go ahead if you want to. But it will only complicate your life tremendously. But if you want to do that, fine. Quit your job, walk in and start demanding more of this and that. Whatever. But if you understand that you are simply moving through mind stuff, which is all we're talking about, then you will see that it is really no different than any other form of mind stuff. Yesterday you felt weak and worm-like. Today you feel powerful and Michael-like. And so what? What difference does it make? The fact is they're both of the mind. So, again I repeat, when you get into that power and when you see that that is what is capable of you, just simply move through it. Understand that you can, just like you can move from the bottom of the bottle through the murk and to the clarity of the top, this is possible. So you've got to stay quietly within it and not make what I see the major human mistake, which is when you tap into these things, deciding, now I'm going to start throwing my new awareness on everybody around me. I am now going to start having other people be submissive to me. You understand, there is this wondrous temptation. Or I'm going to walk out on my existing life and go and find me a new wife or a new husband or a new whatever. This kind of thing is part of this movement. Now, this is where people get confused when it comes to the sexual motivation, and I feel I really should bring this forward. I think this is impending on many people in the world. One of the things that most humans find as they work through their own inner material is all of what the world calls the things that they've not been allowed to do. And certainly, if you are going to find an area that this represents, is the area of sexual expression. Since the time a child is very young, this is the one thing that the world has set aside as the great forbidden fruit, and therefore has made it the one fruit that everybody wants to have until they lay down bloated with. It has not been integrated as a natural and normal and necessary part of one's life. All right. You have set up the game. And therefore, within everyone, with very rare exceptions, and there are exceptions, but rarely, you find people who are in a state of blocked energy when it comes to the sexual drive. Now, if you happen to be married and you run into this, then there are certain ways of handling it that seem to me to be very obvious. One of the main problems is that you're not paying attention. When you are having a sexual relationship, say with your husband or your wife, you think it is ordinary because it's happened so often. You have lost the fact that there is anything else going on here. But if you will pay close attention to what is going on, I think that you will end up having freed yourself from all of the fantasies that your mind has created. Watch. Most of the attraction of sex has nothing to do with the reality. It has to do with the fantasies, the unfinished fantasies. Sex is sex. Eating is eating. Digging in the garden is digging in the garden. It is simply a matter of not looking carefully and closely at it. Those of you who do not have sex in your life and you come upon this energy, it is the same requirement as the first one. You do not, if you wish to, of course, go out. I assure you, if you want to have sexual relationships, you will find them. I don't care who and what you are, you will find them. If your energy begins to put out that kind of a call, it's going to start happening in your life. And you say, but I've been putting it out for years and it happens. And I say, you probably haven't been putting it out. The fact is that if you start putting out that kind of energy and wanting to fulfill that kind, it will come to you. I tell you, it is true. You are the people who put out the beacons. And if you find yourself immersed in a sexual relationship, it's because part of your being has gone out there, sent out the messages, and so comes the need. I don't mean that simply because somebody approaches you sexually that you are sexually inclined. That is not what I'm saying. I say if you find yourself immersed in a sexual relationship, it means that that is what you have put out, and now this is what, you know, you give out the signals, you tune in the frequencies, and they come in. I can just hear some people saying, but that's not true. I've been putting out this signal for years and nothing's happened. And I said, no, the signal has been garbled. The signal has been garbled with fear. The signal has been garbled with misapprehension, ideas of what you should and shouldn't do, ideas of what is right and what is wrong. But when the signals start to clear up, and this is part of the process, then things start to happen. If you happen to be married, then that's fine. You have somebody to take care of all of this. If you don't, you'll find something. Something will come down the road, and that will be yours to experience. I must repeat, it is not a concern of mine that you have all of your needs, your desires, rather, met. It is absolutely true, however, that if it is needful for your balancing to have such an energy field, you will have it. Whether you will have it forever and ever, I think would be a great curse to say that you are going to have this energy field surrounding you, this need pounding on you forever. But to get through it and finish and out the other end is indeed a great help. This is not to say that someday you wake up and say, well, now I'm finished with sex, thank you very much, and put it on the shelf. Those of you that are married may go into the end of your days having sexual relationships, but it will not be the same. By that I mean there will be a deep understanding, a deep knowing, that it is simply one part and is no more nor less important than any of the other parts. It is this exclusivity of it that has made it the bugaboo of the human existence in the Western world. It is so far out of proportion as to be laughable. It is wobbling. The balance is totally out of line. But we must return to the basic, which is those of you who find yourself going into your deep parts of your being and finding all of this energy that you haven't released, sexual, power, love needs, all of these cravings that have not been met, and as they come up, the answer is you have two choices. You can go out and try and get them fulfilled on the earth plane, which may take longer. But if it's what you desire, by all means, do it. There's no law. Understand, there's no rule. But at the same time, I would present to you that the way to do it without turning your life completely on its head is to go deeper and yet deeper and yet deeper, because deeply within you is that place that says, I have all I need. I do not have to manipulate the world in order to feel the beauty and movement and power of my own being. I do not have to have power over others to have power within myself. I do not have to have another person in my life in order to be balanced. I do not have to have somebody to love in order to be loving. And this is where you have made your mistake. You think it takes two to do any of these things, that you cannot have power unless you have power over someone or something. You cannot have love unless you have someone to love. Erroneous statement. Totally erroneous. I think that you should understand that much of what you see as power, chaos, sexual chaos, and so-called love relationship chaos on the earth plane is this kind of coming up of energy that comes into people's minds at certain times. For example, teenagers are notorious for this kind of thing. All that we're saying is that energy is being activated within them. To have it activated earlier than that would prove a lot of difficulties. But at the teenage years, given the normal span, which the Western world has totally lost the normal span of things, this kind of thing would be brought into their life in a normal way at a much earlier time and things would move on. But you have thrown all of the cycles off because of your great propensity for the intellectual. And because school is so important, it's so important that you learn dates and history and grammatical terminology and so forth, you have thrown everything out of kilter to serve the great God intelligence, this great God of intellectual knowledge. And so you put them all in this ridiculous squashed position of having to pretend somehow that all of this other business, which is much more crucial and much more closely related, is secondary, and what is really important is development of their mind. My friends, it's the opposite. If you could only see the normal trend of things and realize the teenage years are the years for getting integrated with that kinds of energy, and later on intelligent working toward mental things is the normal thing, then you would have a totally different world. But you've got it reversed. For example, this gentleman can easily tell you that it was very difficult for him to try and teach any deep meaning to young college students. Any deep philosophical meaning. Why? Because they had no philosophical truth to confront. Their lives had been spent sitting in classrooms, listening to people prattling, taking notes, regurgitating it back and so forth, calling this knowledge, calling this learning nonsense. You can call it what you like. I do not call it learning. All right, so the process has been reversed. So all I'm saying is watch and realize that these are normal functions that come, and the only time that they are bothersome is when you begin to squash them. When you, or as parents, or as faculty, or as friends, or as grandmothers, or whatever you are, begin to squash things, begin to try and push them into a non-normal container, then you're going to start having explosions out the bottom, out the sides, and certainly out the top. I think the fear, the deep fear of many spiritual seekers is that they are going to hit this level that we're talking about and run into energy that has been subdued for a lifetime. And if the fear comes upon them that they are going to misuse it, start causing chaos in other people's lives, and well they know the price. If you find this energy rising any of the categories mentioned, or some that I haven't even bothered to mention, which will come to you. My answer is, stay within. I don't mean sit. I mean stay within your being. Go out. Do what you have to do. Do the actions on the earth plane that have to be done. But stay awakened. Stay with it. Stay deeply within yourself. And you will find that you will begin to understand power. And you will begin to understand love. And you will begin to understand sensual desire. You will begin to understand it. Not by throwing yourself in and participating wholly and utterly, which is one option. If that's open to you, do it. If that doesn't seem your way, don't. There are no rules. If your life is such that you can throw yourself into these things, go ahead. I have nothing to say about it. I'm simply answering a very valid question, is how does someone who is deeply committed to another person, who feels deeply that the best way to move through this life is through a deepening of an existing relationship rather than throwing off the energies in myriad other relationships, how does this person deal with all of these feelings that come up? And my answer is simply to stay quietly within, to go about your business, to keep your body moving, to keep doing what has to be done, and watch, and watch, and ever watch. And as you're tempted to blurt out all of these things, watch, watch. If you blurt it out, say, go ahead. But oftentimes, the blurting out is only because you do not yet understand. And you throw it out there hoping that the other person is somehow wiser than you and will be able to help. And usually the case is the opposite. The person is so confused by what you're saying that they cannot possibly help you. They cannot answer. If they could answer, they would have answered long ago in some deep, meaningful inner way that would make you know that all was understood. Are there any questions? I would like to say one final thing on this. There is deep within each human the knowledge that what they really do not want to do is to hurt another human. They know this deeply. They know deeply that by hurting another human, or another life form even, that somehow they know within them that they are transcending and violating, not transcending, but violating the divine law, which is harmless. And they know this well. So each time their words destroy another, each time their thoughts destroy another, each time their actions give pain to another, a part of them is aching. And this part of you that is aching because of this is the part that I say is available to answer your question. Because if you can just stay deeply within until you reach that area of harmlessness that truly says, my desires really don't matter. They are transitory and they are not going to bring me what I want. And you begin to sense that the thing that really gives you what you want is the love of all people, of all createdness. When you start to really feel that, then you are really beginning to be free. Harmlessness, my friends, is a real word. Harmlessness is a real word. And if you will watch your life for the areas in which you do not practice harmlessness, you will find your own areas of darkness. Because a hallmark of harming someone is you are afraid. There is something in that situation that is fearful for you. You are afraid of being attacked. Some level of your being says, if I do not defend myself, I am going to be attacked, and therefore I will defend. So, when you find yourself being harmful in the verbal state, harmful in the physical state, and harmful in the mental and emotional state, understand that there is something in you that is afraid. And you are afraid that you will be inundated by another power that is larger and greater than your own. And therefore, you must attack. You must defend. My friends, I say what I've said before. You're relying on the wrong power source to defend you. Where do you go when you want protection? Do you go to your ego? If so, you are going to the wrong place. If you go to the divine, ever-present, ever-pulsating plentitude of divine substance that ever surrounds you and inundates you, then you are going to the right place. Where do you go for protection? To your words? To your thoughts? To your actions? The wrong place, my friend. All three layers are very vulnerable. But when you go to the divine within you, you are invincible. And I don't mean with some arrogant invincibility, but with the invincibility of knowing that nothing can ever harm you. I say again, the only thing that can harm you is the illusory ego of your own and of other people's creation. And that is an illusion, and I assure you that it is so. And if you can simply quit relying on your ego to defend you, if you can allow yourself to be harmless in some kind of knowingness that you will be taken care of, that the divine isn't going to abandon you. Abandon you to what? To another ego? My friends, your egos are such powerless mites. They're like little gnats that fly in the vast sky. Are you going to be afraid of that? Those of you who are the vast sky, which you all are you going to be afraid of the gnat that flies through it? And this is what you're telling me? That you're going to spend your whole lifetime defending against other gnats when you are the vast sky? I don't recommend it. And yet that is how I personify what you are doing. If you think you need protection, and if you go to your ego and your words and your actions, if you are afraid to leave your doors unlocked, if you are afraid to do this and that, if you have to have a gun in order to fend off the world, understand that you are filled with fear and you're using the wrong source. But there is a point of fearlessness within all of you. Not strident and arrogant and abrasive, but calm, compassionate, long-suffering. And it is available.
Bartholomew, do people need to experience every human condition before freedom?
Well, again, that's a yes and no situation. You know, I must tell you this, which of course will offend many of you. Some of you are slow learners. I really hate to say that, because you see, you like to think that it's just that somehow it's in the divine realms, all the laws of the earth plane don't apply. But the fact is that some of you are just slow learners. What happens to you is this. You get into a realm of what can I call it, earthly desire pattern, and you like it. You become adjusted to it. It becomes comfortable. You enjoy it, and you say, why not? And so lifetime after lifetime, you continue to burrow down into that soft nest and continue to repeat over and over and over again the same old patterns. All right. I know people don't like for me to talk this way, many people, but I will speak in a more cosmological, occult sense and tell you this, which is an absolute truth, that prior to coming back to a repetition of the life, you do make certain high resolves. You do say to yourself, your deep self, and to those who you have already decided to come into to play the drama with, let us this time do our best to balance the old and be free so that we need not make any new balancing acts necessary. You make these questions. You do pose the definite goals. And you come in with high resolve. And then somewhere along the line, some sooner, some later, you run into your old habit patterns and you do not push against them. You do not try to listen to the deepness within you. You have lost touch with it. And this is why, of course, the Hindu says that it is a blessing to be born in a land like India, because if you're going to have anything pushing you toward meditation, it's more likely to happen in India than in other countries of the world. And I totally and utterly agree with this statement, that that is where you're likely. But you choose to incarnate in a place that is going to give you maximum chance, so you don't have to all run to India and sit there in ashrams. You came to America or wherever you happen to be, England or whatever, for a purpose. It doesn't mean you cannot. If you are here, then you can do it here. You don't have to run and do it somewhere else. This is one thing I really would like to be very clear on. You do not have to travel anywhere in order to do what you've come to do. If you find yourself somewhere, that's where you're supposed to be, so get about the business of doing it. Don't clarify in your mind all of these ideas. Well, I can never find enlightenment unless I go to the Himalayas and stand on Mount whatever and look at Mount whatever. If you have these ideas in your mind, if you have to travel to this country and that country, then you are stuck. And you will get there and you'll find that you're the same old self. And that your feet are colder and maybe you've spent all your money and you're uncomfortable and so on. All right. But if that is in your mind, then go ahead and do it. But the fact is that wherever you are, it's possible. So, being slow learners, you could say that some of you have had to go through the vast majority of the basic problems of mankind. But my friends, I will tell you this, there aren't so many. You know, you're misunderstanding. If you think that you have to go through all of the experiences of mankind, what you are saying is that you have to experience every thought that mankind has ever thought. Now, if you are asking me that kind of a question, I say there's something wrong with your understanding of what man is. Man and the mind that you have created is a succession of unrelated energy fields that you call thinking. They go along, and they are not really as conjoined as you think they are. They're on and off. They come and they go. They change as they move. They interact with other people's thoughts. They build, they die, they move, they sway, they swing. They have power, they have no power. It's an ever-changing eddy. And if you are asking me, in order to be free, do you have to be experience every particle of that vast movement called human mind, I'd say to you, good luck. Do you want to? You see, again, we go back to this illusion that somehow you can only help if you are, that only alcoholics can help alcoholics, that only drug addicts can help drug addicts, and so forth. I hear this a lot. All right, it's true that the terminology used between a drug addict and another one is more understandable. And I agree with that. Yes, by all means, use it. But to say that you, as a human entity, cannot have compassion for a drug addict because you have not been one is stupid. Because in the first place, there is probably somewhere in your Akashic record, if you want to talk about such things, a time when you experimented with some kind of a drug experience, whatever it happened to be, the names and forms change as man changes. And to say that you have never been an alcoholic is foolish. Most of you, in fact, I say without exception. Without exception, there have been lifetimes where that has had its pull. Why not? It's very stupefying. It keeps you away from the moment. Why not? Many of you have been inundated for lifetimes with sexual aberrations of one kind or another. So, yes, the basic drives, and there aren't that many, you do share. But, my friends, you've already shared them. It isn't as if in this lifetime, in order to be free, you have to go through this entire roster of devils and demons and conjuring up of all of this negative aspiration and quality in order to understand it. No, I absolutely reject that. I absolutely reject that. What is true is that if you set yourself above others because you think you do not have that affliction, then it is very likely you will have to return to this earth plane and immerse yourself in that particular thing in order to get your humility back in line. Those of you who walk around and say, I have never had a drink, I have never been tempted, beware. Just be careful, because this means that somehow within you, you think you are better, and beware. What is the area that you think you're better at, that you stand above the world in? Be careful, because if you think you stand above it, if you have, that means, what that means if you stand above it is that you have not completely integrated that part of your understanding and clarified it. It is still there as special. Do you understand? It's in a little category of its own. If you have never been tempted by an extramarital affair, if you're married, beware. That means that there is a part of your being that thinks it's better, that sees that state as so special and wonderful and holy, and you are not participating in the commonness. I'm not saying you should all jump into extramarital affairs. That's not what I'm saying at all. I'm simply saying that you have to be aware that if you pride yourself in not doing something, the chances are not that it's a cleared area for you, but that it's an uncleared area for you, and you will have to deal with it. And instead of returning into another lifetime, I suggest very strongly that you simply meditate. Many of the people that say these things are not meditators. They don't think they need to meditate. A lot of people on the path think they have transcended the place of meditation far before that is necessary. Far before that is necessary. And if they were deep meditators, they would begin to touch upon those parts of their being that have that energy contained, and now they would have a chance of getting it up and clarifying it and getting it out. Now, instead of having to come back, pride cometh before a reincarnation. Pride. Pride in some area that you hold as being better than others in. I don't care what it is. You see, the minute you say that you are better, that this is an evil that has not touched you, it means that you do not understand that area, because there is no area of evil. There is no such thing as an area of evil. And one who understands deeply understands that. Understands that the alcoholic is going through a process of trying to understand, of trying to grapple with, of trying to break a desire pattern that is awash on the earth plane. And the one who understands and has already broken that particular strand has nothing but compassion for that person, deeply, intuitively. Do you see? If you have compassion, real freeing compassion for a person on a certain problem, that means it is not your problem. But if on the other hand you have a superiority, beware, it means that you put that behind a door. That part of your yearning is behind a closed door, locked there probably by your parents. Early on, you should never drink. The drink is of the devil, or whatever, whatever. All of that is behind a closed door. And you have not had a chance to open it. And maybe when you opened it, you wouldn't be interested, but maybe you would be, and you're afraid. Do you understand? There is a great difference. This does not mean to say that those of you that are not drinking on the earth plane somehow have a drinking problem. That is not what I'm saying. I am saying, and I will repeat so that it will get through absolutely clearly. The thing that is the hallmark of an unfinished area is, do you have pride in the fact that you are not participating in it? Because the instant that you have clarified it, it is no longer an issue. There's only compassion. And you never find yourself saying things like, well, I never do that. Oh, well, that isn't one of my problems. If you find yourself saying that kind of thing, watch. Watch carefully. It means you have set yourself up as somehow different, somehow unique, somehow finished. The one who has finished the problem simply looks at someone who has the problem, and their heart moves out, and their first question is, how can I help? How can I help? How in this? Not by prattling and lecturing and saying you shouldn't do it, but how deeply can you find within your repertoire of available, what shall we call them, talents, a way, quietly, lacking in arrogance, and probably silently, to go and aid this person. How can you? By what action, by what field of energy, by what thought forms, by what way can you really help this person? Beware, my friend. Those areas of pride, I repeat, pride cometh before a reincarnation. So in answer to the question, if you feel yourself that there is some area of humanness that is pulling at you, you don't have to jump into it and become an alcoholic in order to understand it. What you have to do is open it up, because the chances are very good that you have already been one. And all of that recorded data is all still there within your, what you call your unconscious. Just simply begin your meditation. Understand that this is an area of pride for you, an area of arrogance. Present it into the meditation time as a question. And then drop it. And then go deeply into your meditation. And watch and see what comes up. And oftentimes what comes up is a replay of your past time as whatever is indicated. And oftentimes your dreams will tell you this. If you're really a deep meditator, your dreams will begin to work for you. And then you'll begin to understand more and more. I repeat again. Many of you listening to this tape do not feel that you need to meditate, that somehow you are above it. But the fact is that you were afraid. Deep meditation is going to put you in touch with the common bond of humanity, which means all of the tricks that your ego has played for so many lifetimes. And some of those areas are still charged. So get in there and get over it. I don't think it needs to be mysterious. The areas that need to come up will come up. All you have to do is be free. Just sit in it and be free. But if your eyes start telling you that you know something that somebody else doesn't know, that you are better than they are, please be there. The sign of freedom means total understanding and compassion in your face, that your heart rushes out to help, and that your mouth stays shut most of the time. Mouths do not answer questions. Those who prattle, you know, are usually the ones who should be silent and think about what's going on within themselves. Advice given without being asked is often a treacherous trap. It merely means that people are trying to set some kind of a game in action. So watch what you say, one to each other. Are there any questions? I think perhaps we've gone on quite long enough. And I thank you all for coming.
Thank you, Bartholomew.